show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Ladies and gentlemen, it is another fantastic evening here on the Vault. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me, the abominable Michael Engel. I don't know if that's a good noun or a good adjective in this context or not, but there it is.
It's out there now, so.
It's out there. It's on the list, so expect it again. I haven't broken out the thesaurus, but, trying to spice it up a little bit. So it's there. So how are you doing this evening?
I'm pretty good. I'm kind of getting out of a really busy period of things, of everything. So I see a light at the end of the tunnel for many, many things. Little League is finishing up. We're doing inventory at work. And that's going to be done this weekend. And then it kind of calms down a bit. So I can actually have, like, free time to do, like, other things that aren't work and bossing kids around.
Which is always a good thing.
Right.
I'm kind of in a little bit of the same boat. Got some crazy life stuff happening, but it always seems to be happening, so you kind of roll with the punches there.
There's no pause button, so you might as well just keep going forward.
Life, so rolling right along. But we are here, ladies and gentlemen, and we have some real stuff to talk about. But before we jump into that, we will be for the All-Star game, hopefully the Kansas City Royals / Mike Trout game, I should say.
Right.
Although that All-Star voting has changed a little bit now, and there's only, I should say, quote unquote, only 7 Royal starters, right?
As of right now.
Yeah. As of right now, yeah. One of which is Omar Infante.
Right.
But Eric Hosmer has been supplanted by Miguel Cabrera, which is probably correct.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean,
I shouldn't say probably, but it is, because
it is.
I mean, a month ago, Eric Hosmer had a legitimate cause for argument, but he hasn't been that hot the last month, so it's probably Miguel Cabrera, and I would even put Prince Fielder above him as well. But
yeah,
you know, that's just kind of nitpicking a little bit. But he's still there, and he wouldn't be an outlandish pick to be a starter, but they're more deserving. Anyway, and Royals fans, get out there and keep voting, because not only do we want to get Eric Hosmer back in there, but the lead that Mike Moustakas has at third base is slowly dwindling. So
yeah, Canada showed up.
Canada showed up big time. They got an entire country voting for one person. Now, it's a little misleading considering that country is about as big population-wise as New York or California, but that's neither here nor there. Point is, it's got to be done. Keep Mike Moustakas at third base, whether he's deserving or not. Let's make this happen. But anyway, the whole point of that being that for the All-Star game, as we hopefully watch 8 Royals take the field, at the very least 5 or 6, we will be at, you guessed it, Kelly's Westport Inn, one of our favorite places. We'll be there. We'll be watching. We'll be having a good time, having some drinks. We have some others for that event. We don't have anything nailed down right now, but we're in the discussions. So stay tuned right here. Follow us on Twitter at Michael Engel and at The Jeff Report. You follow us. We'll keep you posted on details as they come along and as they get finalized. But should be a good time. Either way, we'll be there just, you know, talking Royals, talking baseball, having a good time. It's the All-Star game. The game kind of matters, but not really. We'll have some drinks. It'll be a fun Tuesday night. So show up, for Kelly's Westport. And what's the actual? I'm so bad. What's the actual date of the All-Star game? July 14th.
It is July 14th. It's a Tuesday. Kelly's Westport Inn is at 500 Westport Road, which is right there at Westport, Pennsylvania.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, Kelly's has been great to us all the time. And so I just think back to, like, last year during the playoffs. Like, we're there for when the Royals clinched a playoff spot, and it was just electric.
Oh, that was so much
fun. It was such a great night there. And then I remember we're there for couple of playoff games.
You Darby and I for game 7.
Yeah.
They're on the roof outside. It was a nice cool night, but
it was nice. If Sal Perez would have homered in game 7 instead of game 1, it would have been we would have had the bird's eye view of chaos in front of us.
The other night I was driving home and I was remembering that moment. And I was thinking that exact thing. I was like, man, what if Sal Perez? I mean, that was a no fear shirt, you know? Man on third, down by one, bottom of the ninth, game 7, two outs, everything. This is what dreams are made of right here. If Sal Perez would have just put one in the bullpen, like, oh my God. Oh my
I
God.
I can't even imagine.
Oh, I get chills just thinking about it, and it will never happen, you know? It's the reverse equivalent of KU's championship run in 08. Whenever I see that final play against Davidson when they're in the Final Four in the Elite Eight, that guy who's, I don't remember his name, but not Steph Curry, who actually shot every time I see it, I think it's going in. And I'm like, I've seen this play so many times, I know it's not going in, but I think it is, and I think KU's going to lose. But it ended up that it didn't happen. But so those plays are kind of the on opposite ends of the spectrum there. One turned out well, one absolutely did not. So anyway, Kelly's, lots of great times, lots of great memories. Let's make another one July 14th. Come on out, show up with us. It'll be fun.
Yep.
So now that we get that out of the way, a couple of things to talk about. First, a little wrap up, the Royals. They might even be exactly where they were when we last recorded, as in 13 games over 500. They've kind of treaded water a little bit, which isn't necessarily a bad thing considering the amount of injuries they've had to deal with. And right now the Royals have the second best record in all of baseball. They have the best record in the American League, winning percentage wise. And they had, you know, it's nice to see the Royals were that team a few years ago. Basically our entire lives, not just a few years ago, but up until a few years ago, I should say, where, you know, every time they start feeling a little good, they maybe string some wins together, maybe they're close to 500, maybe they're above 500, and you think, man, maybe this is it, you know, maybe the Royals are starting to turn the corner. And then, you know, depending on when it was, you know, if it was the early 2000s, they'd go up to Cleveland, or the mid 2000s, they'd go to Minnesota, or the, you know, the last 5 years or so, they'd go up to Detroit or whatever, and then just get smacked by what was clearly a better team. And it was like, nope, this ain't it. It's not the year. It's not the time. It was nice to, you know, string together a few wins, but this is just not going to happen. But now the Royals are the team doing that to the other upstarts. You know, Minnesota Twins have fallen on some hard times, and I'd like to lament that, but it brings me too much joy to lament it. So it's I like to see the Twins having a difficult time, but this year they've been better, and they were in first place above the Royals. The Royals went up there and just boom, swept them, game over. You know, they put you in your place type of a series, and it was great to see that. And you know, another team, the Mariners, who a lot of people had them,
they were
on a regional Sports Illustrated cover, and that kind of why not us mold of World Series winners and or World Series favorites possibly, and Rose went up there and got spanked one game, but took 2 out of 3, including one from Felix Hernandez. So you can't feel bad about that, and winning 2 out of 3 against a solid team. You know, it's nice to see the Royals just taking care of business. How many years have we said if they could just take care of business against the bad teams, you know, and kind of tread water against the good ones, they'd be in good shape. Well, that's what they're doing, and they're in really good shape right now as they head into the Bad Blood series. I don't know if you, have you heard the 6-10 promos for these, Mike?
Yeah.
These the Oakland series.
I think it was Tuesday night I heard one, and I was like, really?
This
like,
is really.
I mean, like, there was 2 months ago. And, you know, it's funny to watch, and there's a good quote in one of Andy McCullough's pieces about this, but basically what Hosmer said about this upcoming series was, well, you know, things happened, we went and we ended up playing, you know, good baseball, and they, well, if something's going to happen, it's going to be because they started. So, but you look at the A's, the last couple of weeks they've been playing a lot better, but since that series, they've been in last place. They were had the worst record in baseball for a while. I think they've won like 9 of their last 11 now, and they're kind of a fluky bad team. You know, they're low in the standings, but their ERA and pitching is really good. I think they've scored more runs than they've allowed all year, which should at least get them at 500.
I want to say their run differential is only a couple behind the Royals. I mean, their run differential is. I mean, let me check this out. Because I heard that stat today, and I remember being surprised by who were close to the Royals here. Let's check this out.
But they
but continue with your thought.
They haven't won, you know, consistently all year, and now they're playing.
Yeah,
pretty
sorry,
well.
43 runs above, plus 43. So yeah, for the
and where are the Royals about 50?
40? No, 50. The Royals are 52.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, just by that, it would seem that these are both teams, and you know the rest really show that. And it's kind of weird because you know you have all that drama and hoopla and whatever, and the Royals just kind of keep winning. The A's kind of fell apart, and I don't know if it's because they had a lot of turnover, and maybe it's one of those team building things that they needed to get. And the Royals are basically the same team they've been the last you know 2-3 years. I don't know, but it's going to be an interesting series. I don't think the Royals have any real incentive to like go get revenge. I think they consider it settled. Oakland, who knows? You know, Ventura's not going to be pitching in the series at least because he's on the DL. So that will probably keep some things, you know, dialed down a bit, but you know, Brett Lowry, who started all of it, is going to be playing. And so it'll be interesting to see how, you know, he and Royals react to him when he comes up to start, you know, once the series gets up. But I don't think the Royals are going to be doing anything. Right now, you know, they're trying to win a division. And they're playing good baseball. They don't need to get bogged down in ridiculous stuff like, you know, brawls and whatnot. And really, since that White Sox stuff, they really haven't. You know, they've played good baseball for 2 months without incident. You know, the big thing has just been like injuries, but not suspensions. They're out of the suspension right. woods and things like that. So I don't think there's going to be any kind of thing, but it's going to make, you know, the stories are already coming out. They were coming out earlier in the week already just because it was such a big deal for an entire weekend of just this back and forth jawing and incidents and did Lowry text Escobar or not and yada yada and all that junk. And it's just like, you know, I mean, it makes a neat story, but ultimately I bet it's probably going to be pretty calm.
Yeah, I don't see anything really happening here. I mean, yeah, a lot of these things you could say they were stupid or childish or whatever, but you know these guys are professionals, and if this was a week after all of it happened, you might have a little bit more
right
feeling of some bad blood. But I mean, I don't think any of these guys are really caring now. They're just about to enter the dog days of summer here, really coming into the meaty stretch of the season. I don't think they're putting too much time and effort into thinking about rivalries and stuff. They just want to play and win some ball games. So I don't imagine it's going to be that big of a deal, but you know, it based on their performance, you know, you think, oh, the Royals got a pretty good shot here of taking some of these, you know, taking some games from the A's here, kind of like they did earlier in the season. But, you know, as you said, they've been playing better. And I look back at 2012, if you remember, I mean, as of, on June 3rd of 2012, the A's were 23-31, right? 9 games back. They finished 94-68 on the season. So, I mean, you know, this is the A's have kind of been in these situations before. I mean, that team, from a roster standpoint, completely different than the one that's taken the field now. So it really has no bearing, but it just goes to show that, you know, there can be some growing pains sometimes, and once teams figure it out, they can do it. And the A's are a team that's done it before. So, you know, a little bit more scary of a proposition would be like the Chicago White Sox. Are they kind of that similar type team where they're going to go on a tear here in the second half? But, you know, that's a different topic for a different day.
Not too worried about them.
No. And, you know, regardless of whether Oakland is 33-41 or if they were the reverse, I still, you know, it's still a pretty even matchup. So it's going to be a good series. Thankfully, the Royals don't. Sonny Gray pitches tonight for the Oakland A's. So thankfully, the Royals don't have to face him, which is good. And then after Oakland, I'm really curious about the next series after Oakland, Mike. The Houston series, I think, is going to be it's probably going to be a better barometer for Houston than it is for the Royals. But I'm really intrigued by this Houston squad. They're so young, and they've been so bad for so long, and they've hung around a lot longer than I thought they would. You know, and I'm kind of excited to see it. I mean, you share my excitement?
I want to see Carlos Correa because he might be the best shortstop in the American League already. He's just incredible. And you kind of knew that going into that draft, but man, like he rose and the thing that I want to see here is, and I'm not sure how the starters will line up for that, but you could end up with, you know, guys, I don't know. The Royals don't really have strikeout starters right now. Duffy's about as close as you get, and he'll probably pitch in that series. But I kind of feel like the Royals will have opportunities to get some runs on the board, and if they can get the lead, once you get to that bullpen, I'm not worried about anything because the Astros strike out so much.
They're swingers.
Yeah, they hit it out a lot too. So I mean. Yeah. It's not, you know, you can't just hang it over the middle, but, you know, they will strike out. And if that, you know, when you've got guys like Herrera and Davis and Holland, and not even just them, you got Hochaver and Madsen and Frazier kind of to an extent, you know, guys who can strike guys out. I mean, that matches up really, really nicely for the Royals. It's a smaller park. The Royals have generally done okay there. I think they were in Houston. Well, was that bad series where they got swept? Was that in Kansas City or was that in Houston?
It was in Kansas City. Okay. You're talking about last year when we were ready to throw in the towel.
Yeah, yeah. About
they
this
were like
time
26
of
year. And 29, I think they were.
Yeah.
And they had just gotten swept by the Astros.
Yeah.
And I think I just repeated that they had gotten swept by the Astros like 15 times in a row.
We just did that for half an hour.
That was pretty much the show that week. That was a bad, bad time.
It was like, knock, knock, who's there? Royals got swept by the Astros.
Yeah, and I think I do remember emphasizing that it was at home.
Yeah. So, okay. And that's how I remember it. And so, but they're, you know, 42-32 now. They look good. They've got some starters like Dallas Keuchel is pitching great. Lance McCullers came up and he's throwing friggin' BBs. I think I saw he has like a 92 mile per hour changeup as a starter. I mean, it's crazy. So, they have their flaws. You know, again, they'll strike out. I don't think most people buy them just because. These guys are so young. Now they're talented, but you know there is a point where sometimes it'll even out. But
yeah,
we just really have to worry about three games and you know maybe whatever the next series is. So
yeah,
you know I think it'll be fun. It always seems like those games are interesting in some sense. I think it's because the stadium is so weird. I think there was a series in like 2011 maybe. Maybe it's 2010. It was probably, I don't know when it was. Miguel Oliva was on the team. That's all I remember. And there was a point where a guy, like, he hit a bomb in, like, the ninth inning or something. And a guy dove up in that little weird crevice where you've got the Crawford boxes, but then you've got that wall that kind of is recessed by 10 feet or so. Mm-hmm. And he hit it against the edge of that those boxes where they kind of protrude into the field. Guy jumps up, catches it on the ricochet. The umpires originally ruled it an out. Ended up getting overturned, or basically they conferred and decided that, no, it was not a catch because it hit the wall. And it ended up becoming a double, and the Royals went on to win. And it's like that kind of game I'm always reminded of. Whenever they go to Houston, just because it's such a weird park.
And they got a stupid hill, don't they?
Yeah, which is going to be gone after this year, I think.
Yeah.
Which it should be, because why do you have a hill 440 feet from home? It's stupid.
Besides the fact that it's just dumb,
right?
It's a safety hazard.
Yeah.
Because if you're running and you're looking over your shoulder trying to catch a ball that's going to be over your head,
all of a sudden there's an incline.
Yeah, you know, like you're going to twist an ankle, you're going to twist a knee. Like, and if I may have a short rant for a minute, if I may.
Please do. The floor is yours.
This always goes back to one thing, and I think you and I may disagree on this a little bit.
You bring this up like at least twice a year.
I hate that baseball does not have standard field sizes and dimensions. Ugh, it's so annoying. Like,
literally every other game has the same dimensions.
Very strict. Imagine if you went to, KUK State, right? So imagine in basketball, you go to K-State and it's 20 feet away is a three-point shot. But then you go to KU and it's 25 feet away is a three-point shot. So if you hit a 20-foot jump shot, it's not worth the same amount of points on different courts. You know, right. That's the way it is in baseball. If you hit a ball 400 feet, you're not guaranteed a home run in every ballpark. You know, and it's like that's just insane to me, not necessarily the 400 feet thing, but just the fact that you could have the same hit in multiple parks and get, you know, however, you know, 18 different results. Or I don't know, I haven't looked at the dimensions or anything. Because remember, we did that, the study last year of, who was it? Was it Miguel Cabrera? No, Jose Bautista, right? Where how many home runs would he hit in Stadium?
Mm-hmm.
He looked at the spray charts and everything, and he hit, I can't remember how many home runs he hit last year, or would have been 2013, the year before. But
they would lose about 5 to 10 home runs for a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
Because the power alleys are deep, and, you know, center field's deep and things like that.
And teams can just arbitrarily decide, hey, we're going to move the fences in. Seattle did this year, right? And it's like the Royals did it years ago, and they're like, oh, crap, we're giving up too many home runs.
Right.
It sucks so bad. Let's push these back out. And it's just how can you do that? And then you look at places like the short porches over in, you know, in Fenway or
freaking Yankee Stadium. God, pop up to right is going to go out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, how many home runs should have just been, you know, a can of corn? But in these stadiums, it's 290 feet to the home run in the right field. And it's just they're technically the older stadiums are grandfathered in because they do have minimums for a lot of things now. I think it's got to be 325 to the foul pole now on each side is the requirement. But that's just the minimum. You could make it 380 if you wanted. I mean, shit, you could have just a box. Probably just make it just a straight wall. And then the foul line, you know, you'd have the hugest stadium ever. The MLB would say nothing. They would say nothing. That bothers me.
It is weird. I don't know why that is, other than it's just always been that way for baseball. I mean, you do have other environments in, like, football where, you know, sometimes the ball's a little better for, you know, kicking kickoffs or field goals or long field. You know, you kick it in Denver, you know, you can routinely probably get 55-yard field goals from guys.
Yeah.
Even though everything else is equal. So I don't know.
I'm willing to accept that.
Yeah.
Just because that's a...
But that's an environmental thing. That's not a design of the structure thing.
Yeah, and, you know, when you're playing in Colorado for, you know, playing the Rockies, mm-hmm. you get that same advantage. Ball's going to travel further. And it's amazing that all those 60 home run seasons and everything else, that none of them have been by a Rockies player. I wonder how many home runs Barry Bonds would have hit in Colorado that season in 2001.
I think on Baseball Reference they have an option on there where you can adjust it for that time period and if he played every game in Coors Field. Like if That's he played insane. It like yeah, like you can look at his stats. If he played every game in Coors Field under 2000, you know, year 2000 conditions, I mean, we're looking at like it's like 95 homers. It's ridiculous. like approaching a 2000 OP, like it's ridiculous kind of numbers. They also have one where you can look at it in like 1950 Dodger Stadium, and it's the complete opposite. It's, you know, it's
wow,
you know, really depressing of stats. So
yeah, because the ball is a lot looser and
the mound's higher and higher. Yep. It's a smaller, you know, hitting era and things like that. So yeah.
Crazy, but yeah. rant over, and I think we'll take a short break here in a second. But before we do, we mentioned we started with talking about all-star voting. So whether the Royals get 5, 6, 7 all-stars, you're going to have to increase that number by 2 because prospects Raul Mondesi and Chester Cuthbert were both selected to play in the futures game for the World Team. So that's pretty cool. It's, you know, the Royals farm system has been kind of down, I guess you would say, the last couple of years, but they do have some prospects down there.
Yeah, and Mondesi is, you know, regarded as the top guy, and from all accounts, I haven't been able to see him, but he's filled out. Like, I've seen pictures of him, and he's, you know, he looks like a ball player. You know, when they signed him when he was 16, he looked, you know, really thin and everything, but everybody kind of felt like he was gonna, you know, his dad's Raul Mondesi from the Dodgers and various other teams, and you know, you kind of knew from that line he was gonna, you know, grow up and into a ball player. But he should stay at shortstop, and he's got a little bit of power, and so he's gonna represent the Royals. And Chester Cuthbert's, you know, he had a good spring, has done well in AAA, and he's still young too. He's 22 years old, so.
Yeah, I mean,
or 22 or 23. I don't know if he's you know, run into his birthday or not, but you know, and he's been kind of a guy. They signed him at 16 as well, so he's kind of been in the system a while and starting to kind of get closer and closer. Probably be up around September, I would bet.
Yeah.
So you know, pretty cool to see him out there. He can play first, third. He's played second. I don't know if he'd really ever play second, but he has played second.
Yeah, in a pinch, you could put him there, you know. But
right, yeah. So, I mean, he did in spring training, but no spring training.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's really impressive when you look at Raul Mondesi. I mean, he's not even 20 years old yet. He's 19 years old in Double A, and he's hitting .270 with a 700-plus OPS, 715 OPS. He's got 4 home runs.
And he's like 5 or 6 years younger than everybody he's facing.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts. And now his K rate is almost 25%, and he walks roughly 3% of the time. So he's got some things he needs to figure out. But some of that is adjusting to the new. He's only played 32 games this season in Double A. So he's, you know, some of it is adjusting to the new league. He was in High A all of last year.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see kind of how he finishes out the season, because if he can be in that, you know, 285, 300 range and kind of tick that walk rate up a little bit and keep showing some decent power, he could easily be in AAA to start next season. And I think that's where the Royals want him, which means he's just, you know, as Sal Perez showed in 2011, you know, he's just an injury or, a Royals being in a pinch away from getting the call up, and sometimes players flourish like that. So it'll, you know, Raul Mondesi, we've been talking about him for years, it feels like, and he's still a little ways off, but but closer than we may think.
Well, yeah, and you look like Correa just got called up earlier this month, and Francisco Lindor called up by the Indians. So, you know, those are two elite shortstop types, and Mondesi's kind of in the same kind of spot. He's probably third behind both of them. Maybe, you know, he might push Lindor, depending on how his power develops. But he's going to be good. So, and he should be ready to be at shortstop by the time Escobar's out of the picture. So, you know, that'll be something to kind of keep an eye on. And, you know, again, he's so young. And you know, you look at the different things, like Rainey Gisarli's kind of study on draft and signing age and, you know, how players advance. And, like, the younger you get them, if they're at a certain talent level, young, they seem to develop faster over years and years and years of information. So,
It feels like Bryce Harper's been around forever, and he's what, 25?
He's not even that.
He's
22.
I mean, is he that young?
I think he's only now starting.
I thought
to
he was like 21 when he came up.
Oh no, he was 19 when he came up. He's only just starting to run into.
He is. He's 22 years old.
He's only starting to now run into like guys getting called up who are younger than he is. I don't think he's faced a pitcher that he's older than yet.
Wow.
As a professional, like not just in the big leagues, like in his entire professional career, and he's still got like 20 some homers and is just a friggin' four. And he walks 20% of the time.
He's 2 months younger than Bubba Starling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's that too.
Who's in Double A?
Who's in Double A?
And not doing as well as 3 years younger than him, Raul Mondesi. So now that said, Bubba Starling has kind of put things together a little bit since he's been the last month or so in Double A. I'm on Fangraphs right now, and they don't do splits for minor league players, so I can't really check and see what his last month has been, but. Just Clint Scholes, if you follow him on Twitter, which he's a great follow for Royals fans, especially if you like the prospects, but he's kind of been reporting a lot on Bubba Starling's development and says that not only does he like what he's seeing, but the Royals like what they're seeing. And, you know, it's getting to the point where it's no longer a pipe dream. It may actually be something where Bubba Starling may never end up being worth a top five pick, but he could be somebody that's going to get you some value as a Major League Baseball player. That's kind of what I'm starting to feel like. He might bat 230, 240 with some decent pop, but play Gold Glove defense, and that's a valuable player.
Yeah, you'll live with that. I mean, it's to the point now where this time last year I was like, well, is he ever going to go into Nebraska? And now I don't really feel like that's a thing.
Yeah,
I'm not even really worried about that. He's doing well enough that he's probably going to play in Omaha this year. So that, you know, that's pretty exciting right there, just on its own, that he made it to that point. And to go to a higher level, where Double A is a really tough step. And then
it's usually actually, the kind of make or break one.
Yeah, and so he's actually doing something there, which is kind of the fun thing. So, hopefully that bodes well for, you know, going forward for him. Just, you know, it's almost like a weird kind of back from the dead kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I, you know, hopefully he can do something. I'm kind of starting to believe the more I hear, you know, people talk about him. So we'll see if that's good or not. Sometimes as soon as I start believing is when the rug gets pulled out from under me. So
right.
Just things happen. But yeah, I mean, it's not, and I would have almost kind of liked to have seen him get put into the futures game just for the sake of it, just for the name value of it, just to say, hey, he's there. But, you know, Cuthbert's fine, so I think it's going to be okay.
Yeah. So with that, I think we'll take a quick break here. Stick with us, and we will have, on the other side, we've got kind of an interesting topic. There was an article that was written about the Royals and how they're on the forefront of possibly revolutionizing baseball thinking. So we'll talk about that when we get back on the other side.
We're excited to have an exclusive interview with the new iPhone 4 assistant, Siri. Hello, Siri. How are you doing today?
Thank you. It's nice for me to be here.
Siri, you've been pretty busy with the new iPhone launch. What do you do for fun?
It's just been crazy around here. I've been looking for a place to get away and wind down, but I have not been able to find anything my style on the plaza.
Well, have you tried Kelly's Westport Inn?
I show Kelly's Westport Inn to be at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue.
It's got way more than that. It's been voted by The Pitch as one of the best places to meet guys in Kansas City. It's got a great laid-back vibe, plenty of TVs to watch sports, an awesome pizza place in the back, and plenty of drink specials during the week.
You say it's a nice place to meet guys? Accessing. This sounds like the place for me. Shutting down now.
You can't shut down. If you want to meet Siri and other great Kansas Cityans, check out Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road in beautiful, laid-back Westport. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Thank you for sticking with us through that break. As we mentioned before, we went to commercial. We have there was an article published. Was it yesterday? Was it today?
It was yesterday. A couple days ago.
We're recording this on Thursday, June 25th, by the way. But a couple days ago, an article by Cork Gaines from the Business Insider was published, and his hypothesis was that the Royals and the Rays, both teams that weren't expected to make a ton of noise this year but have been doing really well on the strength of their bullpen, and that the, not only was it because of the strength of their bullpen, but his hypothesis was that both the Royals and the Rays were making decisions and pulling pitchers earlier than you normally would in order to make better use of the strength and depth of the bullpen. So Mike and I, we kind of passed this around the email chain reading it, and some interesting points that he raises, talking about how, you know, the Royals and the Rays are the lead the league in the amount of times a starter has gone less than six innings, I believe is the way you would word that.
Something like that, yeah.
It's
like they have the fewest average batters faced by starters.
There you go. That's what it was.
Basically, is what it comes down to. It was just interesting to me because I watching the Royals for so long this season and pretty much following every game, it just didn't seem like it took into account a lot of different contexts. Yeah, it was like. You know, I think the general idea is that, yeah, the Royals aren't sending their starters out to face as many batters, but I don't think it's necessarily a strategic decision that they've come up with, that they've analyzed everything and put it out there. I mean, you've heard for years and years, the last, you know, few years, the Royals and Dayton Moore have really prioritized they want to get 1,000 innings out of their starters. Like, that's where it starts. And last year was the first like realistic shot at it with James Shields, and you know, they got 200 from Ventura, and they got some good stuff from Vargas and Guthrie and Duffy. And last year they only pitched eight starters, like eight guys started a game. And when you look at that, one of those was Liam Hendricks as a spot starter, filling in for Ventura and later Duffy when they had some injuries. One was Aaron Brooks, again, for a spot start. But other than that, it was basically six guys. It was Chen started the year in the rotation, and after about a month, Duffy came back, and he was a starter the rest of the year. So really, the Royals basically had five guys all year. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you ask them directly, what's your choice, that's what they would want. And I think just about any team would want that.
Right.
And so I think that the article itself just presupposes that the Royals decided, well, we know our starters aren't the strongest, so this is our strategy. So it got me kind of interested to kind of look at where things set up. And, you know, he's correct in that they aren't sending their starters out as often. And I don't think it's in every case just because they have this idea that they want to limit their times through the order, or they want to limit this or that. I think it's some of it is just circumstance. You know, you've got Volquez, who had a game with a blister, came out after three innings. You've got, you know, Guthrie, where he got shelled on Memorial Day. That's a performance thing. And then there's the numerous times where Ventura has come out early because of cramps, or he's been ejected, or, you know, what have you. And, you know, Duffy had, some high pitch count starts where he walked a bunch of guys. Chris Young, you know, came in to fill in for Duffy and for Ventura and some of these guys, but, you know, he had to be stretched out. So you've got two starts where he has to build up to that. Joe Blanton comes in and he starts a game, but he's on a pitch count. And so I think, you know, that right there, that's, you know, almost 8, 9, 10 games there out of 69 that the Royals have played, where the Royals have had some kind of circumstance where they didn't really have a choice about how long their starter was going to go because of, you know, some consideration they had to have. But a lot of it, I think, is just that the Royals don't have a strong rotation. And so guys like Guthrie get hit a little bit. Guys like Vargas, you know, who wasn't very sharp in his first few starts, you know, they just work too much and they have to be relieved. So I think that's kind of the main idea that I kind of took, just looking at things, you know, breaking it down. The Royals have 27 quality starts all year out of 69 games, which is extraordinarily low. It just doesn't seem like you can be a first place team and do that.
Right.
Fortunately, it is in a large way because the Royals do have the bullpen that they have. It's deep and everybody's effective in it. And so that's the one element where I can kind of almost see, but to me the conclusion is more that the Royals are more willing to make a change when it starts to get a little hairy. You know, when guys start getting on, when a guy's struggled, hadn't been sharp, they're more willing to pull a guy before the sixth than in years past, because they do have, you know, seven guys in the bullpen who can take it any time and shut a team down. But I don't think that that's like a core strategy that they started the year saying, we want to limit the times through the order. I think it's just a matter of, in the game, they see that the guy's not struggling and they go and pull him early. I mean, even with like Jeremy Guthrie in his start before the last one, he was pitching a pretty good game, but he was at 67 pitches. You know, at that point, I think, yeah, that's one spot where maybe you want to go to your bullpen early. But if you've got a guy like, you know, Ventura, when he's not cramped up, you know, you want him to pitch as many innings as he can. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like the conclusion is based on what I would see from the Royals from watching them all the time. I could kind of see an argument if they were going to pinpoint particular guys that they wanted to avoid sending through a lineup a couple times, like Guthrie and Vargas would be good examples. You know, but guys like Volquez and Ventura and Duffy, when he's pitching well, I mean, those are guys that, you know, Ventura, they came in thinking he's a number one guy. Duffy, they came in thinking he's a number two guy. Volquez, they signed him thinking he'd be able to get you good innings and has upside to be like a number three. And those guys, I think they want to see them go as deep as they can. And for the most part, that's kind of what they've done, other than Duffy's struggles, Ventura's weird, you know, everything, I guess.
Weirdness.
Yeah, the weirdness of his season. And Volquez has had, you know, some games where he's thrown just a lot of pitches and hasn't looked great. But I think so much of it is just based on performance within the games and what they've done in the couple, you know, within, you know, the weeks before leading up to that particular start, you know, that's kind of determining how they're using guys. That's not to say that, you know, having that bullpen isn't a great luxury, because it does allow them to go to high quality arms in those spots. You know, it would be a different thing if they had Victor Marte and Roman Colon and Ruben Tejeda and guys like that in the bullpen instead of Hochever and Frazier and Madsen as like their kind of B team. You know, that's a much better group now than what the Royals had in 2009, 2010, and whatever. But it just doesn't seem like it's something that they have set up, specifically to do for the full season. I think if you gave them the choice, they would rather see 1,000 innings from their guys, like they've always said, versus, you know, pulling guys early. Which maybe that's saying a similar thing in a different way. I don't know. I see his point, but I think he's stretching a bit in the article.
Yeah, I would agree. And to me, it felt like I like the word to use, presupposed. It was a narrative that was established kind of before. And this is not to slight Court Gaines at all, because it was a very well-written article and very well-researched. It just, like you said, the conclusion didn't seem to fit the evidence. It seemed like there was evidence A, evidence C, and kind of like Jurassic Park, they just kind of filled the gaps. And he filled it in with a narrative that I think he just kind of thought of. And again, not to slight him at all, but I feel like when you're in every game like we are, dissecting every move, you can really see that in all the evidence that you pointed to, the Royals definitely don't want it to be this way. They don't want to put this taxing amount on their bullpen, you know, and I don't think I would be, you know, I would love to see a team kind of try a more progressive approach and get maybe do look to try and have this, you know, consciously go to the bullpen earlier, and as you know, as part of that whole process, kind of change the training methods that the pitchers in the bullpen go to, so that it's not a, you know, 40, 50, 60 inning preparation, but closer to like preparing them for to be 100 inning pitchers. You know, I mean, I think there's some merit in that line of thought. I just don't think that's what the Royals are doing, and it's it would be, I do think, you know, to your point, years ago, the Royals would have, like the other night, okay, Joe Blanton had a fantastic start on Tuesday night against the Mariners, and pitched six innings and gave up one run, had seven strikeouts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he went back out there for the – I had to go somewhere, so I couldn't finish watching the game.
He started the top of the seventh.
And then somebody got on base, and they yanked him right away.
Right.
And
which,
so
if they were going to just pull him, you know, they were prepared to run him through another time.
Yeah.
As soon as so they gave up the hit, they went to the bullpen.
Yeah, they would have pulled him before the seventh inning. But also, you know, a couple of years ago, they would have been left with no choice but to try and say, hey, you got us this far, power through the seventh inning. You know, we need you. But they knew starting pitching was going to be a weakness, and so Dayton Moore has constructed this team with the fantastic depth in the bullpen that they're able to say, you know what, we're not going to take the chance. You put a guy on base, you pitched a great game, get out of there, we'll let somebody finish it up for you. Whereas in years past, you know, when the Royals were really struggling, that's not what they were doing. They were sending that guy out there, and it was sink or swim, and more often than not, they sank. But the Royals are in a position where, hey, we'll throw you a life raft and we'll pull you in and send somebody else out there to finish the job. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I'm really curious to see how sustainable it is, because I don't know if we've ever seen a bullpen like what the Royals are throwing. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'd have to crunch some numbers and do the math on – I mean, if you had Greg Holland, Wade Davis, Kelvin Herrera, Luke Hochever, and say Scott Frazier, all pitch what, 60 innings apiece? Mm-hmm. That's what, six guys pitching 60 innings, which is 360 innings. And there's how many innings in a season? Let's see, 940.
I was told there'd be no math.
50. Yeah. 14 innings in a season. right? Is that right? Let me pull out. I'm gonna pull out my phone here. We're gonna get this. We're gonna get to the bottom of this here. I'm an accountant. I should be able to do this in
you
my head.
You should. I have an excuse but in that I'm
1458. Damn, I was so close. All right, so 1458. And then 1458 minus, you know, 360 is 1098 innings. So, you know, you would if you had all those guys throwing 60 innings, and then you threw, you know, Franklin Morales and Ryan Madsen and, you know, Chris Young. I think that's it for the bullpen, right? Am I missing anybody?
Did you say Madsen?
Assuming all five starters were healthy and here.
Right.
I don't think I'm missing anybody from that bullpen, right?
No, I think you got everybody.
Young, Madsen,
I mean, it's seven,
Morales.
Seven guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd have.
I mean, other than Young's in the rotation right now, but yeah, once everybody's back,
right.
They'll likely bump here somebody back there.
So, you know, say you could get roughly out of seven guys, you could get, you know, roughly 45 innings apiece on average, which is 280, you know, 300. You could probably get 350 innings. So, because I think I said six pitchers would get 60 innings apiece, and that was off. So, say you got 350 from your bullpen, which is roughly 50 innings apiece, which is a lot for everyone in the bullpen to have that much. You know, then you still got to get 1,100 innings out of your starters. So, you know, it's
There's no way to sustain it to continually throw guys out there and only do that. Now, once they got into the playoffs, that bullpen became huge because they could go. You have, you know, with off days, you know, travel days and whatnot, you could throw your top relievers every game if you wanted to, you know, for each, and they pretty much did. I mean, those guys, those three covered most of the innings except for the games where, you know, like the game four when the Royals started to get shelled a bit against the Giants and things like that. So they relied on those guys. They were just as big. They were probably bigger than any one starter in the entire playoff run just because they shut guys down, and they were able to pitch such a higher percentage of innings relative to what they would do during the season. Like, they could literally throw a third of the innings, whereas now they'll throw, I don't know, 15%, 20% maybe. So that's a huge advantage once the Royals get there. The trouble is going to be actually getting there, like it always is. And so they are being tested quite a bit. With Ventura on the DL, and he's already been suspended once, and, you know, he's already had other things, and Vargas has been on the DL twice now, and Duffy's been on the DL and just came back after 5 weeks. And, you know, at some point Chris Young is going to end up slowing down a bit just because, you know, his track record is that he doesn't go that deep into a season, at least innings wise. So they are going to have to do something, and maybe this is something to go along with that, but it's certainly not a plan, I don't think. I just don't see how you could go in and plan that way. It's a convenient contingency, but it's not really like a strategic goal to me.
Yeah, I mean, right now, Wade Davis is leading all relievers, unless you count Chris Young, but you can't, because he's been starting for most of his innings, but Wade Davis is leading all Royal relievers right now with 31 innings, and they've played, the Royals are 41-28, so that's 69 games.
Yep.
So if you basically multiply everything by two and add a little bit, you know, that means that Wade Davis is at roughly 70 innings, which I think he can handle. He's still probably stretched out a little bit from being a starter. Couple of years ago, and then, you know, Ryan Madsen's at 29 innings, so he would be at 60-65. Franklin Morales would be about the same. Kelvin Herrera would be about 60. Greg Holland, you know, the thing that helps them now, not only with the depth in the bullpen, but you've got Greg Holland, who's missed a lot of time due to injury. and Luke Hochaver, same deal, missed a lot of time due to injury. They only have 30 innings between the two, with Greg Holland with 18 and Hochaver with 12. So, and it would be a strange move, but it would almost make a ton of sense if you made Wade Davis your closer for the second half, not because you didn't have any confidence in Greg Holland, but because you could put Greg Holland in and give him those few extra, you know, maybe he has to come in and do an inning in a third or an inning in two thirds, because he's got that extra, you know, he's almost half of what Wade Davis is at now.
Yeah.
So you could kind of traded off a little bit, and they both would wind up in the close to that 70 inning category. You know, I mean, they would be that's not a Ned Yost type of move.
So no, it's not.
He's way too loyal to his players.
Nobody pretty much would do that.
No. And Greg Holland, I mean, you know, he's had his little rough spots this season, but his last two games, he's looked sharp and he's been pretty good. And his fastball velocity was down a little bit, but I think it's starting to tick back up a little bit. I haven't looked at exactly all the numbers from that. Have you looked at the numbers from the last couple of games on him?
Not his velocity. I've just kind of watched and there's the one game where he gave up a few runs against Milwaukee, but he hadn't pitched in like 8 days.
Yeah, Ned Yost kind of fell on the sword for that one.
He didn't look good and got me a little worried. And the next time out, he just blew everybody away.
Yeah,
I was okay, I'm not worried. And then the next time out, he did it again. So I was like, okay,
he does.
I'm kind of okay then. So I was just looking at, you know, how he hit spots and things like that. He's walked a lot of guys all year, but he's also been hurt and had weird usage and things like that. But, you know, I think he's going to be fine.
And maybe a better thing to do instead of, you know, switching the roles since Ned Yost is such a loyal guy, maybe a better thing to do would be give Greg Holland that extra third of an inning anyway, but just, you know, hey, you're coming in the eighth, you know, with an out to go or two outs or whatever the case, you know, maybe instead of trying to go Herrera Davis Holland, you try and go Herrera Holland, and Herrera goes an inning and a third, and then Holland comes in for an inning and two thirds or something. You know, I mean, with the depth that they have, there's a lot of things that they can Yost can do to try and, you know, stretch these or kind of distribute the innings a little bit more, because it's going to be rough with the way they're tracking right now. To have, you know, you want your relievers at 100%, because as the Royals showed last year for the playoffs, it's the key. It's definitely, and I thought that for years, because relievers make the difference in a game so often. It's just over the course of a season, better starting pitching is going to win out. But that's not what playoff baseball is about. Playoff baseball is about a game, more or less. You know, it's a series, but it's
that.
Find a way to win. You know, all you have to do is win 4 out of 7 games. And if that means a starter, I mean, there were how many games? There were a couple games in the playoffs last year. I mean, Guthrie went like 2 innings one game, didn't he? Or 2 or 3 innings one time.
He went 3 in game 7, because at that point it was just like,
yeah, at that point it was pull out all the stops. But, but back to the article, again, to echo your point, Mike, I just don't think that it's a conscious thing that they came into the season thinking they were going to do that. But I do think it's a conscious decision that because we have this bullpen, we have the luxury of being able to pull our pitcher at the first sign of distress. We don't have to see that first run come across the plate to pull him. As soon as that guy's on first base, we can say, hey, we'll take you out. We can finish this off for you. So, you know, I think it's more along those lines than it is along, hey, this is our strategy, we're going to do this. Although I would applaud the Royals for that forward type thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad idea. And maybe like I said earlier, maybe with guys like Vargas or Guthrie, it's kind of a built-in thought that they're going to be a little quicker, but I think that's just baseball. I don't think that's necessarily like something they've sat down and said, this is going to revolutionize things. I go back to it's so much as performance. I mean, I looked at when I was kind of glancing at what each pitcher has done as a starter, it's kind of like I was looking at their game scores, and game scores, when you're figuring those up, they start at 50 points, and the Royals have 31 games where they've lost points off a game score. You know, you want to be above 50 rather than below. So, you know, if 31 of their 69 games, they're below that game score, that tells me that a lot of these guys aren't really doing that great. And, you know, that I would think that, you know, if it was completely a plan, completely from the start, it would be something where, you know, they'd be pitching a little better, but you're still pulling them when they're pitching well. And the Royals don't seem to be pulling their guys when they're pitching well, which makes sense because they are pitching well. But I don't know. I mean, it, like I said, maybe there's a little bit to it, but I don't think it's like a conscious thing that they're saying, you know, this is the new way to do it. I think it just kind of happens to be how it's going. The Royals are in a good position in that they have, you know, this army of relievers that can just go out and any one of them can shut it down. And even when you have like Brandon Finnegan's up right now in the bullpen, and he's pitching great too. So, you know, it's just another arm that you can go bring up. Lewis Coleman's still in the minors and he's throwing great too. I mean, if they really needed, they could do that. But
yeah, I mean, that's another thing. Sorry to interrupt, but that's another thing we didn't really talk about too, is they can also distribute by, you can call up Brandon Finnegan and throw him 20 innings and run him really hard over the course of a month or so, and then, you know, send him back down and bring somebody else up.
Yeah, to bring up the next guy. And I think the telling thing is that the Royals aren't going to be in any trade rumors at the deadline to get more relievers. I mean, they're going to be involved with, you know, starting pitching, more starting pitching, and things like that. So, you know, you're not hoping that the bullpen can keep it together. You're hoping that Danny Duffy showed promise last night, that Ventura can come back and be distraction free the rest of the season, and that Guthrie can maybe at least be a reasonable number five guy, and Vargas can stay healthy. I mean, that's what you hope for. You're not hoping that, okay, well, we got through the lineup twice now, let's go to the bullpen. It's, you know, I still want to see those guys go as far as they are effective. And yeah, I would say the Royals are doing the same thing. Not that, again, it's not a bad concept. You know, the idea, I've always kind of liked the idea of, you know, like, for instance, the All-Star game could be interesting because, hey, what if Wade Davis makes it and you just bring him out to start it? What if more teams did that, where you bring him out, bring out your best reliever, and face the top three or four guys and get them out, and then you bring in your regular guy? Like, let's say Wade Davis starts a game and then Jeremy Guthrie piggybacks him and goes five or six innings, but Guthrie only faces those top of the order guys once or maybe twice, whereas, you know, trying to get him through seven, he's going to have to face those guys three times.
Right.
And the third time can be where it gets really bad. Well, if you can cut that down, then yeah, that's not a bad idea. But it's just, that would be something.
That would truly be kind of that possibly revolutionary progressive thinking type thing that, you know, it hearing the possibility of that makes me think back to your experience that you've told us about, Mike, on Media Night years ago, Someone asked Ned Yost about doing something like that, and his response was that it was an interesting idea, but you wouldn't see him trying it.
Right. And, so, and I think every manager is the same way. It's like no one's going to try it until somebody tries it.
Right.
And baseball isn't really kind to the experimenters who fail.
No, definitely
they
not.
Usually are looking for a new job.
Yes.
So, I don't think it's going to change too much anytime soon. I think more teams are going to be going to this model of, you know, get a bunch of guys who can throw 98 and higher and put them in the back of the bullpen and hand it off in the seventh, eighth, ninth.
I feel like I've seen this storm kind of coming ever since the Royals, you know, 2011, 2012 started to amass these bullpen arms. And because it's something where it's easier to develop a really good bullpen arm versus a starter. I mean, look at Wade Davis.
Yeah, bullpen guys are usually failed starters, like Coach Aver and Wade Davis.
Yeah, I mean, so that's two right there that, you know, you much rather them be dominant starters, but a dominant relievers, you're getting something out of them, which is nice.
Right.
but it's easier to develop them. And then the majority of the time, they're cheaper. Like Greg Holland is making, what, $9 million this year?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, Volker's making more than that, and he's a run-of-the-mill kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Holland is arguably the best, or, you know, he's had some struggles this season, but going in after last year, he's arguably the best closer in baseball. You know, it's like him, and you put, like, Craig Kimbrell and Aroldis Chapman and, you know, those kind of guys, but he's definitely in that discussion for best in all of baseball, and he's making $9 million. So that's a lot for a closer, but for a dominant pitcher, you know, when Clayton Kershaw's making $30 million a year, it seems a lot better. So if you get the Edinson Volquezes of the world and the Jason Vargases of the world, and you pay them, you know, between $5 and $12 million a year, and you kind of spread the rest of that money out over the bullpen, then, you know, I mean, that could be a key to success, and it's a way to manage money. And then it's a way that you don't get hung up on, you know, Clayton Kershaw. I'm not sure how old he is right now.
You can't replace the Kershaw, but you could replace Jason Vargas fairly easily.
Yeah, and you don't have to write yourself into 10 years from now guaranteeing Clayton Kershaw $30 million when he might not be even close to what he is.
Look at Justin Verlander.
Yeah, Justin Verlander is getting $25 million a year-ish.
And
is that right?
He's got a lot of years left on that. So that's what you want to avoid. I mean,
it's
great.
CC Sabathia for the Yankees, similar type deal, making, you know, 20-some million. He had an ERA at north of 5 earlier this year. So it's... You know, it could be kind of a revolution that way.
Yeah, maybe that's the way that the Royals approach is changing things. But I don't think it's just that they're going out there saying we're fine with 5 1/3 innings from guys. Because at some point your bullpen is going to wear down. Right now the Royals are kind of getting by. But I don't think they can continue to really ride these guys. Especially if they think they're going to get into the playoffs again. Because then you got to look at more innings. So... you know, I think the article's got, I think it's an interesting theory, but I just don't think it matches with the way the Royals have been going. I didn't look at Tampa. I know they've had some injury problems too, so maybe that is something that they've consciously done. They probably still have some guys left over from the Friedman days and some good analytics guys who may have come up with something like that. But I think they're in the same bet that, you know, they would think, okay, let's get 1,000 innings out of our starters, and if we can get a guy going 6, 7, 8 innings every day, well, that's a good thing.
Well, because the Rays are coming from years and years of just having freakishly healthy starting pitching.
Yeah.
To where, I mean, they had one year where I think they only used 6 starting pitchers the entire year, and it was only because they wanted to go to a 6-man rotation. It was when they were in that streak of they had a ridiculous like 212 straight games of were started by pitchers that they developed, you know, and the only reason they're kind of forced to this year is, you know, they've had Alex Cobb had Tommy John, and it was Tommy John.
And Matt Moore's still coming back.
Chris Archer got hurt. And so, you know, they're kind of big workhorse guys that they depended on and that they would love to see go 7, 8, 9 innings. They're not there. Mm-hmm. And so they've kind of been forced into this position as well. So without looking as closely off the top of my head, I don't know that the Rays are consciously making that decision either. But, you know, if anybody's going to be more progressive of the two, the Rays will definitely take that mantle from the Royals.
Yeah, they would. Pretty easily.
So yeah, some interesting points there. I don't know if I agree with the conclusion, but pretty interesting article. You should go check it out by Court Gaines, Business Insider, if you're interested to kind of see all we're talking about. He had a lot of interesting graphs on there and some good statistics and well-written articles. So go check it out and then come back and maybe listen again and see which side you fall on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I might think more about it. I might change my mind, but it just doesn't seem like it's a conscious thing. It seems like it's a kind of accidental thing. But if you've got a different opinion out there, go ahead and email us at kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com and you know, let us know.
Or come and tell us to our faces on July 14th at Kelly's Westport Inn.
If you can convince me, I will buy you a beer. If you are of age.
There you go.
And Kelly's is 21 and up only.
Yeah, so. You shouldn't be able to be there if you're not. Right, so yeah, I guess we should throw that caveat. 21 and over, come out for the All-Star game.
Welcome to try, but it's not on me if, you know.
Yes, it is not legal. Apart.
Yeah, yeah. Don't break the law. I mean, we want you to be there, but don't break the law.
Yes.
Stop by Joe's maybe, and we might peek through and yell through the.
Yeah, there you go.
Through the ordering window in Kelly's.
Yep.
Something like that.
That's the best we can do for you. So with that, I think we'll leave you this week. Got an interesting week ahead, as we've talked about. Royals, Oakland, Houston coming up as we go into the All-Star break. And then who do they play after Houston? They play Minnesota again? Or Texas? Or both?
I was just looking at that and should know. But I don't. Let me see if
I have the Royals team page pulled up. Let me switch to the schedule here.
I think they have Tampa, actually.
Do they? Interesting.
No, they have Minnesota, then Tampa.
Minnesota, then Tampa. Okay.
Then Toronto, then it's the All-Star break.
Yeah, so Toronto, by the way, even though their record may not show it as much, their win, I mean, they have like 81, a plus 81 run differential.
They're crushing guys. When they win big.
Yeah. So it's like you're losing all the close games, but when you win, it's the 12-2s and all that. So that'll be interesting. But some interesting matchups for the Royals coming up here. You hope that they can kind of keep Minnesota down. And then, you know, Tampa Bay is in first place, but they're not a scary team. So, and again, Toronto, you know, they've got the huge run differential, but they've got their flaws. So hopefully, you know, it's a little bit of a tougher stretch between Houston's in first place, Tampa Bay's in first place, Toronto's a good team, and Minnesota's right behind the Royals. So this is a little tough stretch to end. It'll be a welcome break for the All-Star game. Hopefully they can come out of this on top. And if they're, say, 15 games over 500 heading into the All-Star break, they can be in pretty good shape.
I don't know what that's like, because they usually don't make that run until the second half. So, I mean, if they're a second-half team again, well, holy moly, man.
That'll be some fun stuff. So hopefully some fun shows ahead on the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Right.
But that's it for this week. For Michael Engel, I am your host, Jeff Hurth. Thank you very much for stopping in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Don't forget to come out on July 14th for the All-Star game at Kelly's in Westport, of course. Say hi, drink a beer with us, all that. But thanks for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.